know, Mike, you keep playing that football songs, it gets us distracted. Then we have callers hang up that want to talk gardening and not football. Yes, ma'am.
You lost Miss Barbara. She'd been holding.
From Green Valley.
I think she didn't. She's not a football fan, I don't think.
But we need to give her an answer.
Yeah, she had bougainvillea plants, very well established. They look healthy. They bloom every year, but she has no blooms.
Okay.
Bougainvillea in Green Valley, not blooming.
Well, you know, it's probably a pretty easy fix here. I mean, bougainvilleas love the heat. They also, you kind of want to take the kid gloves off of them when you are raising bougainvilleas, and they love the full sun. They do love water, but if you water them more than they need, they tend to put on lots of really beautiful
green
growth and no flowers. Being down in Green Valley, I imagine they've gotten more than their share of water down there. It's a little cooler. Lots of rain this summer. Those probably are all factors to it. I mean, you pull the water away from it a little bit. You stick it in a good, hot, sunny spot. Don't fertilize bougainvilleas very much. Again, they put on lots of lush green growth, and they don't flower. So it's got to be one of those or a combination of those. And
hardy plant, you got to live with it, hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Leave them, water stress them a little bit.
Yeah.
And they tend to bloom better.
Isn't that ironic? So yeah. no amount of just blossom food just doesn't help.
Right. Because actually the bougainvillea, when you see that color, that's actually not a flower. That's a bract. It's like a poinsettia, where the actual leaf or the bract is what turns red, and on the bougainvillea, whatever color it happens to be, that's more of a leaf that's turning a particular color. The flower is pretty insignificant, really.
So you're gonna let me plant one now?
No, they're too messy. No, aren't they about the messiest plant on the planet?
They can be.
Their leaves are like crepe paper, so they blow all over the yard, and they are a little bit hard to clean up. But the torchier variety is kind of nice.
They are nice.
A little bit better.
Okay, we'll try that.
Let's talk trees. Big storm blows through Monday night. Mike Reish, our broadcast engineer, actually says he lives right there about 24th Street in Comeback. He says 24th Street was like littered with trees.
Yeah, it took. I was trying to get into South Scottsdale the other day, and right after the storm, and I had two road detours to get around, right, just to get in there. There were trees everywhere. It was a war zone, and really bad. You know what surprises me, Rosie, is that I keep feeling like after these major wind events, there won't be any more vulnerable trees left for the next storm. And I'm just surprised every time another, 6 months go by and we get just a slew of trees going down. It's terrible with our effort to try to green our canopies across the city that we're losing so many big trees.
As a nurseryman, as a guy who sells trees, what trees should I not be selling? I see a lot of Palo Verde trees. Jay and I were talking the other day. Like, I don't know if we'll ever sell another Palo Verde tree ever again. I mean, that's what I'm seeing laying all over the streets. What's your opinion?
Well, I'm really discouraged because a lot of the root stock is pretty poor quality. If they haven't had roots that have radiated out into the surrounding soil, if you have any girdling roots of any type, that tends to lead to tree failure down the road. So we're finding a lot of trees that we dig them up, do kind of a post-mortem after these trees go down, and we find there's a lot of circling roots. So sometimes cultural practices in the nursery can lead to that, or poor planting practices, trees planted too deeply can lead to circling roots, or poor emitter installations can lead to too much water
on
the base of the tree.
We have all that.
But
we have it all.
Yeah, I think, all trees do pretty well if they're planted well and they've been cared for well and the roots have radiated and the emitters have been getting out. I mean, the roots have gotten out into the native soil to a sufficient distance from the tree. But the other main causes are poor quality pruning, lion tailing trees, stripping out all the interior foliage, leaving a heavy concentration of lion tails of heavy foliage on the outer third of the canopy, leads to this incredible wind forces in that outer third. That'll yank these trees over, pull over. You have entire tree failures. Sometimes we'll have a deep soaking rain when we get into that monsoon cycle with day after day after day of rain. Now the conditions are ripe for a lot of total tree failure, not just branch failure, but because the entire root system now is in wet soil.
You lose your anchor.
You could lose the anchor. The entire root ball can come up, and it's a shame to lose the big trees that way. But proper pruning practices is critical. Another factor is the way trees are located in the landscapes. We recommend always planting trees in groups of two or three or four trees because they buffer the wind from their neighbor. They're working together as a team. And what we often have happen is, like it did last year this time, one of our customers lost a huge eucalyptus tree. We took the tree out. Well, now the one next to it went down just last week because the next tree is more vulnerable. The same happens if you lose a big branch in a tree. It's important to prune the rest of the tree because the other branches now are more vulnerable because the wind is going to get into that canopy a little more easily. So plant your trees together, group them together, try to have them working together as a team.
All right, let's get to trees. We've got Dave calling from Mesa, wants to talk about trees from SRP. And we've got Cheryl from Sun Lakes, wants to talk about Orange Tree, doesn't look well. And then we're going to go off topic just 1 minute and answer Josh's question on TIFF and lawn. Good morning, Dave. Real quick, sir.
A willow acacia. They told us not to stake them, that they would straighten up on their own and that they would be stronger. But this one's bent all the way over, and I'm wondering if I should stake it or if I should prune it or if I should just leave it alone.
These are one of the trees from SRP's program. SRP was distributing trees, mm-hmm. planting on the shady side, sunny side of the house to present shade. I think the willow was one. The Palo Verde was another. Mm-hmm. So told not to stake it. Mm-hmm. What do we do now?
Well, and I'm going to let John take this from here, but I mean probably told them not to put a stake right next to the trunk of the tree because that will weaken it. You don't want to put a shipping stake or something, but, you know, to properly stake a tree, to put, you know, two lodgepole stakes out, not tie it up so tight that the tree can't flex and bend a little bit in the wind. Mm-hmm. A willow acacia is one that I would say it almost always needs to be staked. They're really tall, skinny, stretchy, and they grow really fast.
Yeah, the whole point of staking is to get the tree off the staking system. Eventually, you want to be able to wean it off, so you don't want to tie it so tightly that you end up preventing that process of eventually weaning it away from the staking system. So I like the idea of not staking unless you need to. In the case of a tree bending over like that, I'd suggest maybe even trying to trim that top portion off that's bent over if you could without it destroying the structure of the tree. If you need to stake it back up, as Jeff said, tie it loosely enough to allow a little bit of movement on the system with the idea that you're going to try to get it off as soon as you can. But trimming a little bit off the top sometimes is nice if it helps you eliminate a staking system altogether.
There's some great tips, Dave, for your tree from SRP. Let's get to Sun Lakes and welcome Cheryl into the conversation. Talk citrus trees. Good morning, Cheryl.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have two orange trees. One is very healthy and doing well, and the other one usually is, but it usually produces a whole batch of oranges. However, last year produced only seven, and this year, within the last month or so, the leaves have started to wilt. The fruit is small. Some of it is turning yellowy, not healthy yellow. And we tried feeding it last week because I'm desperate, and nothing has changed yet. And I don't know if we're going to lose the tree or what, but all the leaves are drooping, mm-hmm. and they're starting to get a little crispy.
Hmm. Well, I always suggest that it's tough to diagnose anything over the telephone.
Right.
Best thing to do is to take some pictures, some leaves, whatever, and you know, go down to your local nursery or you know, an arborist in your neighborhood and have him come out and look at the tree. You know, you're not really uncommon. We've had a very, very, the hottest?
July on record. Second hottest August on record.
An August on record, so I've seen lots of sunburned citrus out there.
We found, too, with the high moisture content in the soil leads to a lot of fungal activity. There might be Phytophthora or another fungal pathogen that's active in the soil. When you start seeing a system-wide symptom like leaves drooping, turning colors, it could indicate something's going on underground. I would, first of all, shut your water off on those trees right now. After the seasonal rain we've had, you can go probably another couple of weeks without any water at all just to In the event that there is some fungal activity, you want to arrest it by slowing down that activity and reducing the water, because the water provides the favorable environment for that fungus to be active. So if you can kind of dry things out a little bit, you might want to consider getting an arborist in. Maybe a fungicidal soil drench would be in order to try to knock that down if you have some activity there. Those might be some considerations.
Sun Lakes. Romy would know the nursery right off the top of his head. Best nursery in the Sun Lakes area?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay, can't refer one off the top of your head. I can't either. That's where Romy comes in. He has all those places memorized by address. Okay, real quick, we've got about 30 seconds to address Josh's concern on TIFF. Josh, real quick, my friend.
Good morning, guys. This whole Arizona grass thing has me very confused. So there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of opinions. But what's the best type of grass to have in Arizona?
Well, we only have really one type. It's Bermuda grass. Now, we have several different varieties of Bermuda grass. And I would say, just depending on what your needs are, you can get online, like go to West Coast Turf, look at their website. They've got several different varieties of Bermuda grass. Some of them are going to be that lush putting green type look. If you've got lots of dogs and kids and you need a rough and tumble type grass, you know, there's better suited Bermuda grasses for those. None of these Bermuda grasses will tolerate any shade, so then, you know, you've got another problem there as well. But Bermuda grass is all we have.
There you go. Winter lawn. What do you do with a winter lawn?
What do I do with a winter lawn?
Yeah.
Well, because our Bermuda grasses won't tolerate much shade, and they can and will go dormant in the wintertime, and if you want a green, lush lawn, and it will be the greenest, luscious lawn you'll ever have, is to put a winter lawn. In fact, I would prefer to have a beautiful winter lawn and not water my summer grass at all. I could have a gorgeous ryegrass lawn for 9-10 months out of the year. We're going to start putting them in here at the end of the month, and they won't die out, especially like a beautiful spring that we had this year where it transitioned, you know, into June was pretty nice. So for about 9-10 months out of the year, and you don't have to water it as much.
Yeah.
You don't have to mow it as much.
Yeah.
You don't have to feed it as much. And I've pretty much let my summer Bermuda grass lawn die.
That could be a win-win-win for everybody, particularly when we're trying to convince all Rosie on the House listeners to reduce your water consumption by 10% over the course of this next year. That is our standing challenge. Lawns play a big part of that, in that 60% of the water we consume at our homes is used outdoors. Folks, when we get back, it's more Trees, Trees, Trees with John Eisenhower and Jeff Harper here in the Outdoor Hour of Rosie on the House.